All right. Welcome to Crappy Friends, the podcast that discusses female friendship, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Girl power defeating bitchery since 2018.
I'm New York Times bestselling author Kristen Higgins.
I feel like you forgot that almost.
I almost did.
I didn't even say today bestselling author John Stay.
And we're best friends. Yes, all right.
So much hesitation. I feel like you forgot that.
I just spaced out a minute and I thought, is that my name? Am I a New York Times bestselling author? Sounds good to me. You know, you have those moments in life where you think, did I dream that? Or, you know, am I really here? This kind of thing. Like, is this actually my house? You know, mm-hmm. Or maybe I'm just hallucinating. I don't know.
Who knows? Could be. I don't know.
You look very cozy in your pajamas and fuzzy robe.
This is a zipped hoodie in my pajamas. I wore this at 8 o'clock in the morning to walk the dog and mm-hmm. have worn it through 4 meetings at work. Zoom is a wonder, you guys.
Zip up and you're all set, right?
All set.
Yes. Well, this week we have a really interesting letter on a topic we have never had before. Mm-hmm. And shall I read it or do you want to read it?
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
All right. Hey, ladies. One of my best friends is an older Japanese woman with whom I make origami and practice my Japanese. A few months ago, her 20-year-old niece, Mizuki, not her real name, moved to our city from Japan. Mizuki has a fair amount of baggage, so her aunt thought that a fresh start in America could help her. Her aunt thought that I, as a confident, successful woman in my 20s, could mentor her and inspire Mizuki to make a life plan. I was more than happy to oblige. I like Mizuki. She's sweet, she's kind, she's considerate. She's patient with my clumsy Japanese. I've introduced her to my 3 roommates, and they all like her. The one issue is that Mizuki is very afraid to try to communicate, even on a basic level, in English, which she understands pretty well. I have to act as a translator in groups, and given my own intermediate Japanese, it's tough to have a natural hangout. Sometimes I can feel my roommates getting frustrated when she clearly understands, but gives a very simple response. It was fun or good in Japanese. They've told me that as much as they like her, it can be tiring to wait for me to translate, especially when I myself can't understand her or translate what they're saying. They still spend time with and include her, but they've had less patience with her, something Mizuki hasn't failed to pick up on. I'm sympathetic to her, I really am. Using a second language is vulnerable. Mizuki has very low self-esteem, so I understand why attempting to speak English is so scary. But part of why she wanted to spend time with Americans was to improve her English, and she's been taking English classes in the hopes of getting a job here soon. Her aunt is fed up and is tempted to send her back to Japan if she doesn't try to improve her spoken English and find employment. How do I embolden Mizuki to speak English without being too hard on her? I'm not a you're in America, speak American type, thank God, nor are my roommates. So I'm against outright forcing her to speak English, refusing to respond, only speaking English to her, etc. She's expressed that she doesn't want to go back to Japan, and her aunt and I have both reminded her of her English speaking goals. I don't think her knowledge of English is the actual issue. Do you have any ideas to encourage her pursuit of learning English? Ways to offer support? Low stakes modes of practicing? Arigato gozaimasu. Yeah. Signed, Mizuki's Tomodachi.
Wonderful. Excellent Japanese, Kristen.
Oh, well, I thank you. I have no idea if I got it right, but
I did want to make one small correction. The beginning of her letter, she says she makes onigiri.
Origami. I just read that. Yeah, onigiri. I don't know what that is.
I looked it up. It's Japanese rice balls. And so there you go.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. Well, I have a friend who spent 25 years in Japan, an American, and I went to visit her, and she taught English as a second language, and I visited her class. And what I was immediately surprised at was that no one spoke English. And my friend said, come on, you guys, you have your chance to practice on an American. Go ahead. And they were very shy about doing it. And once she kind of forced them to, because she was their teacher, they started speaking and their English was beautiful. And I said, wow, I'm amazed at, you know, you've only taken a couple of years and you speak so well. But I think there's sort of like a national humility about, you know, I don't want to get it wrong, so I'll have someone else translate. And I know my friend's husband was like that too, that he could speak English quite well, but was always afraid of getting something wrong. So he would ask my friend to translate. And I also remember, like, I was a big Yankees fan, and Hideki Matsui was a Japanese baseball player, and he always had a translator. And then one day, like, his translator wasn't there, and his English was fantastic.
Oh, wow.
You know? So I think that, for one thing, the first thing to do is to praise her and remind her that she's in a country where most of us don't speak another language, and we're so impressed that she can. Mm-hmm. Or she's learning, even if it's not perfect, it's so much more than most of us Americans have. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree?
100%. I mean, consider that she will be learning everything in a second language, math, whatever skill she has to learn for whatever job she gets, she'll be learning in a different language, which is really impressive. Considering if I went anywhere, I wouldn't be able to do the same. I would struggle really hard. So it's very impressive, really impressive.
Yeah. So I think that first thing is to say, you know, your English is so good already. And, you know, my roommates really want to hear from you. Don't be afraid of screwing up. They like you. You know, your English is so much better than our Japanese. You know, I always say that to someone who apologizes, like, oh, my English isn't very good. I'm like, well, it's better than my Italian, which is non-existent, you know?
Right. Right.
Tomodachi, you asked for low stakes practice, which I thought was a great idea. Like, prepare a meal and you talk about the food. So your conversation is focused on one subject. And, you know, I mean, like, I remember taking French class, and that's how we would do it. Like, we would do food, we would do barnyard animals, the farm, you know, the classroom, and we'd learn kind of those things. I think that's a great way to keep it focused and maybe not be so intimidating, because if you and your roommates are all American and conversations bouncing around from politics to your jobs to romances to books you've read, it can be kind of overwhelming, maybe.
Yeah. I was going to say, if there's a way you can make it fun and almost as if you're not practicing, like singing karaoke or singing in general, playing Monopoly, or something where your mind is doing something else, being very competitive, and you don't have to worry about making mistakes.
Right.
You could also, like, designate certain days with you and your roommates where we're going to be helping Mizuki with her English day.
Right.
And then have separate meetings for you guys just to kind of breathe a little bit until Mizuki gets better at English.
Yeah. I think, too, like, the idea of sitting in front of four English-speaking people as the foreigner and as the person who's not in great command of the language yet is very intimidating. You know, for one, she's the new girl.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how old she is, but she's 20. You know, you're all a little bit ahead of her in life. You all have jobs. You have your own place. You have friends, and she is a stranger in a strange land who knows one person, kind of, because you're her aunt's friend.
Right.
So I think that's a lot, especially if she is a shy person. So I would also suggest that you try some one-on-one time with her.
Yeah.
Just, just you and her, and you say, like, for this hour, we're only going to speak English, and then the next hour, can we only speak Japanese so you can help me with my Japanese?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You know, so put her in control of something.
Right.
And then that would be good with a hobby, too. Like, if she comes over and you guys are cooking, say, okay, you know, you make dessert and tell us what you're doing as you make it. Mm-hmm. Because then she can be focused. And if she forgets a word, you know, give her a minute to find it and then help her out. You know, you don't want her to, like, be hanging there. She can't remember the word for teaspoon.
Right.
You know, supply it. But if you have that sort of, like, this is the topic that we will be discussing, she can maybe practice a little bit. You know, the other self-esteem stuff is fairly hard to comment on because we don't know this girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's difficult. We don't know her, and I'm not familiar with her culture.
Yeah.
So it is very hard to comment on that. I did want to circle back and say also you guys could binge a TV show together. We have an author friend who learned how to speak English by watching our dear friend Sherry Thomas.
Yeah. Soap opera.
Right. By watching soap operas. And so there are great shows on TV, Netflix, all the rest right now. Schitt's Creek is hilarious. And that might be a fun thing that you guys can do together and talk about together in English while she's practicing her English.
Yeah. And then I would say, you know, in terms of other self-esteem things and looking for a job, that's asking a lot of you, Tomodachi. So, you know, you can only do so much. You can role model, you can be a friend and an ally for her. But you're not going to be able to change her,
right?
Change her personality, fix anything that's wrong. But you can give her opportunities to be someone whose company you enjoy.
Yeah.
So, you know, including her or making time for her, not treating her like your mentee, mm-hmm. with you as the mentor, but treating her like a friend. You know, let's go shopping together. I mean, I know things are limited with COVID, but you're like, you know, you take a walk, you go to a cemetery and talk about, like, this is how we bury people in America and what is it like in Japan, you know, maybe do things where she is good at something, whether it's making rice balls or cooking or, you know, give her some opportunities to shine a little bit and then give her positive reinforcement, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
And I think what you're doing is really lovely. I, you know, you've done opened a big door, and I think Mizuki is quite lucky to have you. You know, it's a little odd to me that she was sort of sent away to fix her self-esteem. That doesn't really seem like a tactic that will work. Like, you need to have more self-esteem. We're kicking you to a new country. but as I said, it's hard to comment. So, you know, a lot of positive reinforcement, reminding her that, you know, her English is so good and the only way for it to get better is to use it. Mm-hmm. You know, that when you have her over, don't just hang out, watch a show that you can all enjoy, you know, especially like romances, Christmas movies. They're very easy to follow.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like watching The Crown, say, where you conversations about parliamentary decisions and that kind of thing, which is all I've been watching these days. Just I'm all about The Crown. I'm watching documentaries on the Windsors. I, you know, watch Diana in her own words.
Oh, you did watch that. Okay.
Yeah. So good luck to you, Tomodachi, and arigato for writing to us.
Oh,
and that exhausts my Japanese.
I have none. You are so good.
Oishi. It means delicious. I still remember that one.
I have none. You are so good.
<Thank you. laughs> Now, that was a relatively short letter. Shall we do a twofer? What do you think, Joss?
Yeah, let's. Let's
do a twofer. Okay. All right. Next letter is yours.
That I wouldn't have to do the opening again, which I don't want.
Always good.
Okay. I'm going to do this top letter. Dear ladies, you know how you talk about balance and friendship. I can't seem to find that. Every friend I have is a good person and seems to genuinely like me, but I'm always the one who has to do things, call, set up, walks, and Facebook video calls. It has always been the way. We are all in an unofficial group of friends, and there are 7 of us. One is a recent widow, and I'm divorced. The other 5 are still married to their one and only husbands. We all have kids who more or less grew up together. Since our widowed friend lost her husband, everyone has been especially kind to her, as you would expect friends to be. Did I get this kind of rally round the flagpole when I got a divorce? No. Circumstances were different, but a loss is a loss. I have no real complaints except this one. Where's the sympathy for me? Where were the dinners dropped off for me? Sometimes I feel like if I stopped calling and trying, I would never hear from any of them again. When we are together, which the last time was on Zoom, it was great and we had many laughs and tears. But in between those times, which I always set up, nothing. Oh, and one more thing. One of the couples lives down the street from me. She invited the widow for Thanksgiving because she would be alone and without her husband this year. Guess who sat home alone? Me. My 3 kids are grown and didn't want to bring my grandchildren to see me, which I get. But would it have been so hard for my friend and neighbor to include me or at least think of me? My feelings are hurt, and I'm afraid I might say something rude regarding the widow friend who is getting all the support. Yours is the first podcast I listen to because I love Kristen's books and I love hearing you ladies laugh together. I appreciate your advice and you. Signed.
The divorced one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
She asked us to supply a name and we did pick one in advance. That's a very, I think there's 2 things here going on. One is you're tired of being the Girl Scout troop leader.
Right.
Which I get as the Girl Scout troop leader.
I was thinking of you as I read that. I was.
I understand that. And here's where I have come at the ripe old age of 55. And I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm guessing we're about the same age, or maybe you're a little bit older because ours is the first podcast you've listened to. So here's what I have to say. If you're good at being the troop leader, be the troop leader. You know, it can be a little bit wearying sometimes to say, like, will I ever see my friends again unless I, you know, invite them over or, you know, say, when are we going to Zoom again? But you know what? You're doing a service for everybody and you're good at it and they've probably come to rely on you. It's absolutely okay for you to say, I'm tired of being the one who sets all these things up. Hey, Joss, would you be the one to do it for the next couple months and put someone on the spot, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And if Joss says, well, I really, if you rely on me, then we won't get together for a couple of months. And you say, okay, fine. Judy, how about you, Judy? You know, you can just be very honest about it, that you're tired of doing it. But if you're good at it and it's really not that hard, why not just keep doing it?
Yeah. I reject a little bit that someone should be able to refuse to do it for a couple of months, because I would forget also, but I would also put a reminder on my phone so I wouldn't forget, because I recognize that Kristen does it all the time and she can use a break. So.
Right. Right. I think we had this situation where in our plotting group, mm-hmm. 1 year where I said, like, you know, I'm tired of doing all this. And our friend Anne said, like, okay, my turn. I'll take it over.
Yeah.
Easy peasy. Wasn't an issue.
Right.
The other thing, which I think is maybe the bigger thing, the divorced one, is the the jealousy that you're having over the outpouring of support and love. And I think you're entitled to feel that way. Mm-hmm. You know, they are two different circumstances, but you have both lost a spouse. And I mean, I'm going to be honest and say sometimes becoming a widow is easier than becoming a divorced person, because the widow gets to have the spouse as a good person, as the person that she loved who tragically died. The divorced person has to deal with like the death of your dreams of life together, that your spouse maybe wasn't the person you thought, your happy ever after didn't happen, not because of a death, but just because you guys weren't able to make it work for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's very easy to be sympathetic to a widow. You know, we have been kind of taught about, you know, including them, not forgetting them at holidays and stuff. Whereas being divorced, I think people are less sure about what to do.
Yeah, I think too, we still see it as, or maybe you do, the divorced one, see it as, or others, as a point of shame. This was something that everyone's supposed to be able to do this, get married, and that's supposed to be easy, and you're supposed to be able to do it. It's like a social, cultural construct. Just everyone is supposed to get married at a certain time in their life. Maybe that's changing now, but that's how it's always been. And not being able to succeed at that feels horrible. But people don't necessarily recognize that that's something that would affect you that way.
Mm-hmm.
And offer support that way, that you weren't able to succeed at this.
Also, divorce is a choice. So they might be thinking like, you are happier now because you got a divorce, you know?
True.
You cut bait and are moving forward in the direction that you chose, whereas your widow friend didn't choose for her spouse to die. So there might not be a recognition immediately of the grief and the loss that you're going through.
True.
And I think too that it's, you know, it's hard, like, right, I'm thinking this is a recent letter, and so we're dealing with the time of COVID, and there's not a lot you can do in person. So dropping off meals, you know, if these are your close friends, and you feel that they weren't there for you during the divorce, you're either going to have to bring this up, or you're going to have to let it go.
I agree. Especially depending on like when your divorce happened, and they might think you're over it too, to be honest.
I mean, you don't have to do it like in a confrontation or anything, but you could do it, you know, saying like, oh, we're all, you know, we're checking in on you, Luann, you know, how are you doing and stuff. You know, I know it's not the same thing, but I too have been really lonely lately, you know, and I also lost a spouse in a very different way, which is very complicated, and it's hard for me too. And just, you know, let your friends be your friends. If they're good people, if they're good friends, then they're going to say, tell us more, you know, or yes, that must be really tough. And you know, you also might find an ally in the widow, you know. Yes. Call her up and say, I know it's not the same thing, but I do understand loneliness.
And loss.
How are you doing? And, yeah. You know, I remember about the time that my dad died, one of my mom's friends went through a very messy, very painful divorce. And she actually said to my mom at one point, like, I envy you, Noelle, because you'll always have Ed the way he was, whereas I have to live with the reality of my shitty husband,
yeah.
You know, being out there breaking my kids' hearts and, you know, doing stupid things. And, you know, I will always have to deal with him because he's the father of my children.
Yeah.
So, and it was very comforting for my mom, the widow, to feel like, yeah, you know, I mean, that's true. And also to help some, like I always say, when you feel helpless, help someone else. So if your widowed friend is flailing and just going through this new loss, might be really great for her to hear about somebody else's emotions and issues, because I imagine it gets really boring to be the center of attention. How are you, Luann? Yeah. Are you doing okay? Of course you're not. You're heartbroken. You know, right. What can I do? And it might make her feel really good to be the shoulder rather than to need the shoulder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, I guess I just have to wonder if maybe your friends think you're okay. You're over your divorce. That's why they haven't come around, or maybe they did at the beginning. There's not that much information here to say that. And now they no longer do it. But maybe you're the kind of person like me who's very capable, and people don't recognize that you're in pain. And so you will have to talk to them about what's been going on with you and how you're feeling.
Yeah. I get the impression, divorced one, that you're kind of a very capable person. Very badass. You are the den mother of your friends group. You know, you've raised three children successfully, and that maybe people don't know that you need something.
Yeah.
Because the outward facade is, you know, I'm a tough woman. I got my act together. I'm the one who organizes everything. And being able to admit vulnerability is tough. And it might be easier to be a little jealous of the widow,
yeah,
than to actually say, I'm hurting too. And I have to admit, you know, like, I'm a little jealous of you, Luann, because it's so, you know, like, everybody has really rallied around you. And honestly, you guys, I could have used some of that. I could still use some of that. And, you know, I would say use some discretion with when you say that.
Mm-hmm.
If your widowed friend just lost her husband, maybe now is not the time.
Right.
If it's been a few months, you know, it's okay. And if you feel like you can't do that, get online and find a support group,
yeah,
for divorced people.
They're everywhere for sure. Yeah.
If you don't want to talk to your married friends or your widowed friend about how divorce sucks, then find some divorced friends, you know,
yeah, that's
true. And commiserate and support each other and find out strategies of coping. But there's nothing wrong with telling your close friends how you're feeling. I mean, that is the essence of friendship.
Right. I do like your idea about sort of getting with the widow and maybe deepening your friendship based on this loss and loneliness that you both sort of share. I think that's a great idea. Really, I love that idea. That's a nice way to deepen your friendship, is just to talk about, you know, how lonely you are now, how your routine has been totally interrupted. You were used to sleeping on one side of the bed, and now,
yeah,
you don't even get a leg over to the other side, and how you deal with that.
Right, right. And I really do think that, I actually think it's a term, sympathy fatigue.
Oh.
You know, where, and in this case, I'm thinking of as the person receiving the sympathy, like, you just don't want to talk about it anymore. You don't want people to look at you with those sad eyes,
mm-hmm,
and say how brave you're being. And you want someone who can treat you like a normal person and say, you know, I ran into my ex-husband in the parking lot of the post office, mm-hmm, last week, and I'm furious and I just have to bitch to someone.
Mm-hmm.
She might love that. That, yeah, might be the highlight of her day, is to, yeah, hear about, like, somebody else's drama problem, you know, being treated by, you know, as that normal person who can think about something else. And if she says, look, I'm in mourning and I don't want to hear about your problems, then, you, yeah, know, we were wrong and we apologize.
But I would think she would love that. I mean, the one couple who lives down the street from you invited her over for Thanksgiving. Why don't you invite her over? COVID, you know, being safe and social distancing and all the rest.
But, yeah, and it may have been that the friends down the street said, you know, our widowed friend needs this big time. You might not have been invited because of COVID,
yeah,
not because you're, you know, less desirable friend. Maybe it could have been discussed. Like maybe the host could have said, we would have loved to have included you, but our bubble is only so small, or you work at the grocery store and we're just, you know, whatever. It could be a reason different from they just didn't think of you.
Right, right. I mean, they could have thought that you were hanging out with your three kids and your grandkids. Maybe that's what your Thanksgiving was going to be all about. And they thought you were busy, but the widow was not, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, it would be awkward to say, like, we can only have one guest and you're not it, right? So maybe they just decided that in the hierarchy of need, the widowed friend had a greater need. So I would not be as quick to find insult if these are your friends and they are tried and true and proven. Mm-hmm. I would say, don't be afraid to open up a little bit, to admit your vulnerability, to ask for help when you need it, and see how that goes. And let us know. We would love to hear back from you.
Good. I would also say that if you're the one who's setting up the Zoom calls and the Facebook calls, you could be the technological one and no one else knows how to do it. So keep that in
mind. Don't, yeah. You know, being the den mother is, that's sort of an acknowledgement that you have some skills, and whether they're social skills or technological skills or, you know, organizational skills, good for you. Good for you. It's not an insult. Okay. And hang in there, divorced one. I hope you have a better Christmas than you did a Thanksgiving. Yeah. And Chinese food restaurants are open on Christmas.
Are you sure?
Yeah. But they're not open on Thanksgiving. And I'm sure of that too.
That is so weird to me.
Yeah. Which brings us to maybe not our embarrassing personal problem, but my pathetic personal problem.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
It was Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And the princess was going to her future in-laws with her fiance, and that was lovely. So it's just going to be dearest son, my husband, myself, the dog, the cat. And we were so excited because, you know, Thanksgiving is one of those high pressure holidays where, mm-hmm. you know, you wait all day to eat and then 20 minutes later you're stuffed and you're wearing uncomfortable, attractive clothes. And I was just, for years, I have been fantasizing about skipping Thanksgiving and just getting Chinese food and watching movies and not working and just really like being a lounge lizard.
As you know, I've done a couple times. It is joyous.
You are my role model in that, Jess. That Christmas where you had 2 weeks off and you didn't leave the house.
And it was joyous. I made a list of all the movies and shows on Netflix I was going to watch. Like, I prepped hard for this.
Yeah.
And I made a list of all the takeout I was going to get. It was fabulous.
The happiest time of year. And I wanted to do the same, but with my son and husband. And so we were planning, like, we will just fill the kitchen table with food and we will just graze all day, whatever we want. So we get online and we order all the food and, you know, we're arguing, like, do we want steamed dumplings, fried dumplings? Let's get both, you know. And we put in the order and then it says online ordering not available today. And so I'm like, oh, they must be really busy. So I called and there was no answer. I'm like, wow, they are super busy. Let's try a different Chinese food restaurant. So we did the whole thing again, like all the same foods ordered online. And then 15 minutes later, I get a phone call and it's from China City. And she's like, hi, we're closed today. And I'm like, you are? But you're a Chinese food restaurant. Like, what about all the people who don't have families to go to and stuff? And she's like, yeah, no, we're always closed on Thanksgiving. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. And we called around and Googling, open on Thanksgiving, nothing, not just Chinese food restaurants. Everything is closed. And so my husband and son race off to the supermarket, which is also about to close, and they just grabbed things out of the freezer, frozen Chinese food. And we came back and cooked it, and it was so bad. Joss, it was so bad. Like, It all turned to mush. There were no noodles. There was no chicken, no beef. Yeah. It was just like a mush of food with the occasional red pepper thrown in. Yeah. So disgusting. It smelled bad. But we ate it anyway. Like grimly. Like we're in a, you know, Dickensian orphanage show. Like just spooning the gruel into our mouths. And my son had made up a list of movies to watch, and he wanted to see some old classics, and we watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest while we're eating the worst food in the world. The house smells bad. We bought enough of it that there were leftovers, but we just threw them away because no one should have to eat that.
Right.
And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, not a cheerful movie.
No. As I recall, not at all.
Not a cheerful movie. And also not a movie that time has been particularly kind to.
Is that right?
I felt it was very hokey and irritating. These long, slow close-ups getting closer and closer to Nurse Ratched's face, closer and closer and closer, closer, getting still closer. It was mad. So mercifully, I dozed off at the end when all the good stuff happens. You know, like plot finally happens.
Yeah.
And and then I said, I'm going to get some ice cream. And it's not going to be my last serving of ice cream today. Yeah. So that's how the day ended, watching The Crown again and eating vanilla ice cream. Everyone to feel very sorry for me. If you want to send me a turkey cooked and stuffed with mashed potatoes on the side, that would be awesome.
Thanks for listening to Crappy Friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Crappy Friends and consider leaving us a review. Email us your friend stories at theladies@crappyfriends.net. I'm Kristen Higgins.
And I'm Just A.
And we're best friends. Forever.